Track every storm.
Prolific rainfall totals.
Every piece of debris that's on the road's edge is a potential piece of debris that's going to fly down the road somewhere else.
Be ready.
We're going to continue to provide relief. We're wired for this.
Sky Stormwatch or Radiant Credit Union.
Thanks, Sky.
News Talk 97.3. The Sky.
Good morning and welcome. Fourth and final hour of our get together. It is the 9 o'clock stretch, and it is 9:06. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Happy Thursday. We're making the best of it for a lot of us in the listening area. We really dodged a bullet. And for the most part, we've come out of this thing in pretty darn good shape, especially if you compare to some of the folks in South Florida, the tornadic activity. When this beast Milton came on shore last night at Siesta Key, and then it ravaged its way across the state and still left as a, as a level one hurricane. So let's talk to our friend in Tallahassee, Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez. Governor, how did you all fare, and what do you think overall to the response and the preparation for Hurricane Milton?
Well, as you mentioned, I think all things considered, the storm was massive and, of course, had devastating impacts, but it did weaken before it made landfall. And so some of those initial storm surge predictions that they were looking at were lessened. And, of course, we still had to contend with torrential rainfall, flooding, of course, the heavy winds, and just the overall impact. And the tornadoes, as you mentioned, really were devastating. And so we have a lot to deal with today as the sun came up, and we're starting that process. Of course, the search and rescue was ongoing throughout the night and well into today. But now we've got to get to the business of rebuilding and of course, analyzing all the devastation throughout the state, which is a pretty wide swath, as you know, and as you mentioned, it cut across on both coasts, really suffered quite a bit of damage.
Well, look, nobody wanted any kind of thing happening right on the heels of Helene. I mean, that was devastating enough, especially for folks like in the Big Bend area. And so we felt for those people. Then all of a sudden, we're starting to talk about another storm building and coming our way. The good news from that scenario happening so close together, I think, is that people really paid attention on this one. We got those people off of Florida's west coast. We monitored the traffic on I-75 northbound, and we saw how traffic had kind of normalized for the most part by yesterday. That means the previous days when it was packed, people were doing the right thing. Did you at the state level kind of see things in a similar fashion?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people really, once they saw it get to a Category 5, I think people really started to take it seriously. And we often say, don't get too caught up on whether it's a 3, a 4, or a 5. It's going to be a major storm. It's going to have impacts. It's going to have bring with it rain and flooding and all the things that we've become accustomed to here in Florida. So I think when people saw it get up to a 5, I think they really decided to evacuate. I think in our shelters, we had probably about over 80,000 folks throughout all of the counties that had the shelters up and running. And so those are statistics that are heartening for us because people are heeding those orders. And then now we just need them to continue to comply with safety measures and precautions. Stay put, don't go out. There's flooded waters, there's down power lines. You unfortunately see a lot of fatalities occur after the storm because of generator usage, people getting up on ladders and on roofs. And so we want people to be extra cautious and mindful of that challenge and that risk.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Look, people see a task ahead of them, and they want to get the sooner they get to it, the sooner it's over. But they need to put their health and safety first. Yeah, you mentioned a surge, and that the surge is a big killer. But long before these storms came ashore, we saw what I would call a surge in our home owners' insurance policy rates. How, is the state still working diligently? Can we create more competition? What can we do to bring those rates down?
Yeah, I know that's a concern for a lot of people, obviously not just this morning, but just generally speaking. And I know we've done a lot thus far. We've worked on creating legal reform. We've worked on bringing more insurers into the market, making it more competitive, stabilizing the private market. And then, of course, a big chunk of the folks that are impacted and that will likely have claims are on Citizens, which, as you know, is the state-run insurance. So the legislature, I suspect, is going to want to look at this. I don't know that the governor has said anything today, this morning, specific to insurance. But there's going to be a lot of damage and there's going to be a lot of impact. We're hoping it's less than what we had originally braced for because of how the storm diminished right before it made landfall. But again, for someone that lost their home or someone that has a claim, you know, their house is flooded, it's a tough haul, and they're going to need some assistance, and they're going to need for us to find a way to really continue to build on the foundation that the governor and the legislature worked on over the last couple of years.
Yeah, because, yeah, when these storms, I mean, even if you're, impacted, indirectly and very mildly, you might be happy about that. But we do think about it. We're like, wow, what's going to happen to the cost of insurance now after these two major hurricanes? And so, hopefully those can be addressed effectively for, you know, for all the parties involved, and so that people, yeah, can be made whole after a terrible tragedy. Hey, let me ask you this. FEMA's been criticized, I think, really mostly about their response to North Carolina. What are your thoughts about how FEMA has reacted to these storms? And, the state of Florida appears to be doing their job very well. Can't FEMA just kind of, mimic what we do?
Yeah, well, the governor just shows tremendous leadership, and it starts at the top with him. And he doesn't sit around and wait for FEMA to come in and send the cavalry, because we understand that we need to take care of Floridians, and they're not going to be patient while FEMA's trying to figure out when to send teams or how to process reimbursement claims. We have a great relationship with FEMA, and they've been at the EOC and working with our Division of Emergency Management. We haven't asked for anything from FEMA or from the president himself that they have not granted thus far throughout this storm. But what I'll tell you is the governor recognizes that you sort of need to lead from the front, right? And you can't just sit back and wait. So he does all the things that he needs to do to help Floridians, and he's said it himself. He's the one driving the train. FEMA, we rely on them for support, but at the end of the day, if there's something that we need to provide for Florida residents, we're not going to let red tape and bureaucracy get in the way. We're going to help Floridians in their time of need and make sure they get what they need in an efficient and effective manner.
Yeah, and I guess, if you know, just let us know on a final note, any closing thoughts you have to the folks here in the Sunshine State. Like I said, most of our listening area has been very, very fortunate. So what do you say overall?
Well, I would say to continue to keep the people impacted by both Helene and Milton in your prayers. Of course, if you were not personally impacted and you're willing to donate to our disaster fund, we would greatly appreciate it. That website is floridadisasterfund.org. No contribution is too small, and people are going to need a lot of assistance, and we rely on that fund to supplement what is oftentimes inadequate reimbursements, whether it's insurance or FEMA or flood insurance or whatnot. So if you have the means to donate, we'd really appreciate it. I know we've gotten some big corporate donations, but no donation is too small, and people could really use your help today.
Every difference makes a difference. So we really appreciate it. Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez, thanks for taking time out. I know you're busy and sharing with us. We look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you.
All right. 9:14, Bob Rose Show, Greg Cassidy. We're staying on top of all of this for you, how it impacts us directly and indirectly, our neighbors to the south, etc. And coming up, we're going to have the GRU CEO, Ed Belarski. We'll ask him how GRU and his customers fared and what the future holds in general. We'll talk about all that and more coming up on News Talk 97.3, The Sky.
When storms brew,
the eye wall,
batten down the hatches,
only one station can get you the right information.
Make sure you're executing your plan now.
Sky Stormwatch or Radiant Credit Union.
Stay alert.
We get storms in October.
News Talk 97.3, The Sky.
Attitude of gratitude. Dodged a bullet, my friends. It is 9:19. Time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Happy Thursday. Yeah, you got to keep track of the days because, there's a big hurricane coming. And then we refer to it as the turtle race, you know. We watch it. It's a turtle. Then all of a sudden, bam, here it is. And here it was. And here it came, Siesta Key. Probably fortunate as far as loss of life and surge and stuff that it didn't hit closer or directly on Tampa Bay. Not that I wish any harm to the folks in Sarasota or Siesta Key, but this thing came ashore and it was still 120 mile an hour winds. Then it left Florida on the other side, still with 85 mile an hour winds. So yeah. And it was the tornadoes that turned out to really be one of the more deadly aspects of this storm. More tornadoes than I can ever remember being associated with a hurricane. 36 reports by some standards, some saying, you know, they got over 100 calls. We know where some of them hit.
Yeah, 19 like specific tornadoes that we know of.
Yeah, so definitely loss of life. And, you know, our hearts go out to people that are dealing in a more direct way with this whole storm. And even people who've, have lost their power. That does... that's not fun to deal with, but we've got folks that are working hard on that. And as we speak, you know, sitting here with us right now, we've got the GRU CEO, Ed Belarski. Good morning, Ed. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, thanks for asking me. I really appreciate trying to be here to educate the folks on what GRU is going through and what the future holds.
Boy, a lot better today than right after Helene, am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we prepared as though we were going to have another Helene. We brought in crews from Lubbock, Texas. We brought in crews from the Riviera. Oh, not...
The Redneck Riviera.
Yeah, Alabama. We had, 30 mutual aid crews hunkered down last night. We fed them. Put them in their hotel rooms, ready to go first thing in the morning. And we had 50 tree crews as far away as New York. So we were ready for most anything. We also had crews through the night.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. You were able to deploy some of the workers because we never did get those, you know, the tropical storm level winds in the area. That's where you always have to say time out, right, for their own safety.
Right. Yeah, we actually had gusts as high as 44 miles per hour. And, you know, it's a weird thing that happens. You know, you get the gust and then you calm down to 28 or 20 miles an hour. So you get that rocking motion with it changes the root structure of the trees. And sometimes that's worse than having a straight 50 mile an hour wind. It just bends it a little bit.
Almost like the old, wooden post that's in the ground. You move it, work it back and forth enough, you can pull a thing out of there.
It's amazing when you get into these things, the practical applications of this stuff. And you're right. I mean, and then the trees were broken. Mm-hmm. In a lot of cases, didn't necessarily fall in Helene. So we're out there walking the lines right now, making sure we don't have those things. And of course, we are in Briwood because every storm, Briwood loses some of its power.
There's a lot of trees in there, for sure.
Oh, my goodness. Coming in, I saw some crews there. I stopped, and it was nice. A lady applauded them when they came in. They said, oh, my goodness, and they got a little applause. And, they saw in the back lot, which is where we have our problems, the back lots, where the trees just intersect with the lines, and there was a branch. And it was kind of an easy fix.
And but you have been outspoken about this in the past, in Helene, and are you going to once again push for a greater ability and leeway to clear these power lines, to clear those areas of the impediment of trees? Because I mean, in other areas, you see where they the power lines kind of take precedent. Now, I'm not a tree killer. But there's some common sense, logical things that I think need to be done. Do you feel like you're going to get some movement in that area?
Yeah, unfortunately, with those decisions, a lot of this is on private property. So you got to get, owner's permission. And a lot of folks may be along a main thoroughfare, and they have an area that will impact people further down the line, but they don't want their trees cut. We ask. They can't do it. Well, when they expanded some of the roadways, we didn't expand the easements.
Oh, so it kind of ate into the easement a little bit. So even less room to work with.
Yeah, you see it on 39th, see it on 23rd. You see those trees that are growing right through into the lines, and it's on private property, and there's not much we can do in those situations. But we're going to try. Well, look, we increased the tree trimming budget by 33% from 2022 to this budget year. We're doing a lot of work. We also increased the budget in energy delivery, contrary to what's being said by folks out there. We increased the budget this past year by 7.5%, while at the same time strategically cutting $12 million of money from other areas that weren't essential to those kinds of operations. So we were in full preparedness.
Not to bring up bad memories, but I have to. They sold us the idea of that, and I didn't accept it, but the idea was sold for a biomass plant. It was post-hurricane when we had like four roll through here. Like, we could be using all of those scraps, all those leftovers. They wouldn't go to a waste. They'd be recycled from at the biomass plant. Tell me, am I wrong or am I right? None of that kind of stuff ever gets used at the biomass plant.
You know, some of the big trees, that get cut down, that get sent to some of these suppliers can be, but for the most part, we need a constant supply of this. Mm-hmm. And we have another management company that actually goes out and gets contracts with suppliers. So we'll work actually with state parks where they thin the herd, if you will, mm-hmm. on some of the trees in those areas. We work with byproducts of the lumber industry. But in terms of these tree branches and the mixture of things that go into it when they bring it to their marshalling yard, it's not conducive to being chipped, shredded, and sent in as a fuel stock. So that's a long answer to say, yeah, we don't use it the way they promoted it to be.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we do use it, though. The biomass plant is utilized, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually on its 10-year outage. The turbine is being inspected. It's what we do. It is operating. It serves us well. It gives us diversity of fuel. It certainly wouldn't have been the type of plant we had built for our usage, but we have it, and so we're going to use it. I heard you talking about the FEMA and things like that.
Yeah.
I did want to mention that, that's something that they're right. FEMA is a payer. We go through a lot of paperwork. We fill out 214s that, show all the hours that people work.
They make you break it down and then they can audit you on that. And it's a pain.
Oh, absolutely. So, and then it takes 3 years or so to get that money back. So
3 years.
It will take 3 years to get that money back. So we'll spend probably $3 to $4 million on Helene that we won't get back for 3 or 4 years. Now, the other thing is you have to get over a certain amount of money before they reimburse you. So for this storm, we ratcheted up. We were prepared. We're ready to go. We won't get paid because we probably didn't get the minimum. Because it's $1.2 million. If we don't spend that kind of money,
That to get into it.
So that's why we have to be judicious on what we prepare for, what we don't, because it's not our money. It's the customer's money.
Right. Well, if it takes 3 years to get paid, I'm sure on the other end, when you pay your taxes, if you wait 2 or 3 years, the federal government would understand, right?
What?
You try to get it in trouble.
Yeah, I hope nobody's listening.
You don't look good in orange. Just saying. Just telling you.
Just remember, you need to pay your fair share, pal. All right.
That's right.
I will try to do that. I wanted to also mention that you had Rick Scott on. He was very proactive when he was governor. When I first came on board, he invited all the folks that are running the public power systems in this. He invited them to Tallahassee. We had a great time talking about what he could do for us.
Wow.
And the current governor's staff called us up on each one of these hurricanes saying, what do you need?
Nice.
And that's why things go so well under this kind of leadership. Ed Belarski, CEO of GRU, thank you, sir. And keep in touch with us. We still have more to talk about coming up next on 97.3 The Sky. Good morning and welcome. It's 9:37. The Bob Rose Show rolls on. Craig Cassidy is here as well. I was looking for updated numbers from NOAA and the National Weather Service and all that. And I was like, oh, come on, update. Well, it had updated like an hour ago.
Wow.
It's just that nothing really changed. That is, this thing, Milton, he is still a hurricane. 85 mile an hour, sustained winds. That's moving north, northeast at 18 miles an hour. It's away from land now, and keep on going, pal.
Yeah.
And don't look back. But wow, I mean, it stayed a hurricane crossing the state, and then is still a hurricane. So this thing unleashed some power, and the folks in Siesta Key and some of the surrounding areas are probably really going to feel the felt the brunt of this. And look, it's going to take a day to really kind of get a good measurement, a good look-see of the kind of things that have been done. Hopefully, there'll be limited loss of life, even though we already know there was loss of life before, you know, this thing was even coming to shore.
That was shocking, wasn't it?
Yeah, that tornadic activity was out of this world. St. Lucie County officials, this was at 9 o'clock last night, they already confirmed there were multiple fatalities following tornadoes in the area. The Spanish Lakes Country Club was hit very hard. That is actually a retirement-type community. And,
that's sad.
Yep. And this is, Fort Pierce, Port St. Lucie area. And, yeah, it's awful.
I think it's going to be weird for those of us who live here. Okay, so you chopped up a downed tree in the middle of a highway this morning on your way to work. But in the big scheme of things, once everybody gets power back around here, most of our area fared really well. What's going to be shocking is as we watch the news and look at Sarasota, Siesta Key, Tampa, even Orlando with flooding, and even as it went across the state. You know, when it was still in the Gulf, the waves were coming in on the Atlantic side just because of the big circular motion.
Yeah, they were seeing some nasty stuff, and they were hundreds and hundreds of miles away from it. So, okay, the good news is I think everybody really heeded the warnings, paid attention to the messages, reacted to it quickly, evacuated in a timely fashion, and I think that will make a lot of difference. And moving forward, hopefully, you know, we'll know, hey, it is the old adage, Grandma taught you, better to be safe than sorry.
Well, we talked about it a little bit earlier. The difference between, say, Monday and Tuesday's traffic and yesterday's traffic on I-75 North. Man, Monday, even driving through Gainesville and Ocala, people were driving like idiots. They were stressed. Accidents were happening like crazy. I-75 in the morning was packed Monday and Tuesday. And then yesterday, there was nobody on the road.
Well, I wouldn't say nobody.
It was lighter than normal traffic than a regular day.
You mean around here or on
I-75? I-75.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was.
Well, you monitor it every day.
It was just amazingly light, which, again, to your point, people actually paid attention this time, listened. Now, again, be considerate. Those folks need to get gas and go back home. And who knows what they're going to be going to. So I believe it was Marion County. I was told 37,000 additional people in the county who had come from farther south.
Yeah, and that's part of the idea behind the shelter thing is it doesn't necessitate you to drive hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
And, a lot of people just would find that challenging and difficult for a number of reasons. Hey, somebody left their dog on the side of I-75, and it was no, accident. The dog was actually, chained to the fence that, sits on the other side of the ditch that's on both sides of the interstate. Officers with Florida Highway Patrol in Tampa rescued a dog that was tied to a pole off the highway. Luckily, the dog was saved before Hurricane Milton, hit the shore. Governor Ron DeSantis found out about it because this whole thing went viral, and he warned that the state of Florida will hold anyone who mistreats pets accountable. That's awful. And the dog is so cute. Looks sort of like,
Spuds McKenzie.
Spuds McKenzie. Remember him? And FHP troopers rescued the dog. Yes, it was tied to a pole near I-75 and Bruce B. Downs Boulevard, which would be kind of that northern area of Tampa and Tampa Bay. Oh, wow. So the video shows the officer approaching the scared dog, and his legs were completely immersed in water already.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before any real surge and a lot of downpours were yet to come. I mean, who would do that?
That's okay. Worst case scenario, something happened. I don't know. Don't chain the dog up where it can't even move to higher ground. If you're stupid enough to dump your pet, at least don't limit them to be able to escape.
Yeah, that's weird. Like that's just weird. Sick.
It is.
Hopefully, they'll find out. You know,
I hope whose somebody
pet it
knows
is, and they'll be heck to pay.
Yes.
Yeah. The video was coming out just as the window closed for final evacuation notices. According to officials, this is about the same time that the Skyway Bridge was being closed off, then the Howard Franklin, then the Gandhi, and then the Courtney Campbell. And so anyway, kudos to FHP. Spot the animal, saving the animal's life. And
those first, we appreciate our first responders.
Yeah,
and here's the thing, you know, as viral as that story went, somebody knows
that story was both viral and vile
at the same time.
Yeah.
Somebody knows whose dog that was.
You think so?
They'll have to.
Yeah, because it's been seen by so many people.
Uh-huh.
Just make sure it's not a case of mistaken identity.
No, don't.
Don't go slapping anybody around going, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's his dog.
make sure it's the right former.
Yeah.
And then do what you want.
What?
No, I'm just trying to be like a Democrat.
Oh.
You know, like the ones that were talking about the guys that aren't voting for Kamala because she's a woman. I mean, they weren't pulling punches.
That guy from Kansas, he's a professor, and he said anybody who wouldn't vote for Kamala specifically because she's a woman, we should line them up and shoot them.
Well,
talking about shooting, and your daily job takes you to a campus
you're
of a school.
Professor.
But they're not violent.
They're not the totalitarian party, are they?
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I just love it how somebody is, you know, points the finger. It's like, you misogynists, you.
Yeah, right.
It's like, well, wait a second. You're assuming that there is a large number of men who may not vote for just because she's a woman. I just, first of all, I don't agree with that.
No.
Second of all, exactly who are you to judge that? Are those personal kind of feelings that you have?
How do you know what they think or feel? Maybe they just think she's a moron, like the rest of us do.
Right. Why can't you just measure her the way you would normally measure somebody who is seeking your vote for higher office?
Yeah.
You know, are they worthy of the office? Can they accomplish the task that the office demands in a way that makes sense with you, your values, your ideals? I mean, doesn't matter whether she's a woman or not.
No.
You know, I always throw out that Margaret Thatcher. It's like,
wonderful.
You know, you talk about a strong, smart woman that knows how to be a leader.
Yes.
But that has nothing to do with gender.
No.
It's so, anyway. Hey, not only were dogs rescued, people were rescued. Uh-oh. This person, I'm not going to give you, I will give you their name, but first I will give you their generic name.
Yeah.
A Florida man.
Oh, of course it was.
A Florida man. Yeah. Look, locally, they kind of, I guess some people know this guy a little bit.
Okay.
They refer to him as Lieutenant Dan. Remember from the movie?
Yeah, Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump, yeah. Joseph Malinowski is actually his name, but he has a nickname. And even the Tampa mayor, Jane Castor. She knows it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, apparently the she announced that the Tampa Police Department this morning just saved Lieutenant Dan. He has been rescued. He's now in a shelter. If we can get Lieutenant Dan to go to a shelter, I guess we can get anybody to do that. Oh, yeah. Well, you kind of helped the process along the way. They grabbed him off a boat.
Wow.
Yeah. Lieutenant Dan previously explained in a TikTok that his boat was the safest place in the world to be. When asked to explain why he decided to stick out a Category 5 hurricane and one of the worst hurricanes in Tampa history, why he'd want to ride that out on a sailboat, Lieutenant Dan explained, "My faith in God. God told me to come out here and get a boat. I came out here and got a boat. Everything he's been telling me over the last few days is I'm doing the right thing. He's got my back. I'm in good shape. I ain't sweating. We're going to ride this one out."
Mm.
And then maybe it was also God who said, Just kidding. I didn't think you'd be dumb enough to do it.
Yeah, I gave you a brain and everything. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah. And then I also told people to go rescue you.
Yeah.
So I don't know what makes some people, what makes them tick.
I don't know.
So to speak. All right. The Buccaneers and their families, they went to New Orleans ahead of the storm. Not normally a place you'd think you'd, you know, take safe haven from a hurricane, since you're already like under sea level. But they knew it wasn't heading that way, and that's, you know, one of the division rivals. So I guess they probably have some deals maybe with some of the area hotels and stuff like that.
Well, it's kind of like the story I shared with you off air, and I won't mention any companies or names. But one of the employees who was a college student at UF, which he lives on campus, good strong buildings, they've got a police department, there's hospitals, they've got all everything, decided to, instead of staying in a place that is safe, like the UF campus, decided to go back home, maybe at the parents' suggestion, to spend the storm with the parents in Miami.
So he got in a vehicle and drove to Miami in the midst of the storm.
Yes, to be there for the hurricane. I'm like, do these people have access to a TV or radar or the news or just makes you things that make you go, as a late night comedian used to say back in the day.
And I mean, that is a 4-6. That's got to be 6 hours, right? To Miami? I think.
You know, I mean, no traffic going that direction, so you had the road to yourself, I'm sure.
Yeah, which would feel kind of odd. Like, why is everybody that's on the road going the other way, and absolutely not a soul is going in my direction?
Well, that's kind of like the people that we always talk about that will drive in a thunderstorm with no lights on, and they're like not noticing that everybody around them has their lights on.
Oh, yeah, that happened to me. I'll give you the story later, but I flick my lights to get my turn on.
Yeah.
Oh, no. They still didn't turn them on. Normally they do. It's almost like... Anyway, you know what we need right now?
No, Bob, what is it? Besides, I don't know, a donut
a
or...
A nap.
Oh.
Yeah.
A donut and then
a nap just doesn't sound good on the air.
Well, not during the show. It wouldn't,
whoop, 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 whoop. What would sound good on the air is people calling in with upbeat, positive thoughts. We call it things that make you smile, and it's brought to you by the best dentist in the whole world, Robin Larson Dental. So please call in now, 877-975-9825. Looking for some good, upbeat stuff, non-political? You can do it. Call in now, 97.3 The Sky. The Bob Rose Show continues. Greg Cassidy is here. It's time for Things That Make You Smile. Upbeat Positive Thoughts, brought to you by Robin Larson Dental. Call now, 877-975-9825. And good morning, Kaz. What's making you smile?
Good morning, Bob and team. I'm telling you, this has been a doozy. And I'm in Hawthorne, Florida, in Putnam County. And it's beautiful. It's windy. We're going to get some more rain. There was a big tree that fell down, but it's still alive. I'm taking care of it, and it's just gorgeous.
And that makes me smile. Mark, what's making you smile?
Hey, good morning, Bob and Greg. What's making me smile, I'm going to need some Greg air quotes on this, is the power was only out for 2.5 hours with this latest hurricane. So good job. We got out of it very well.
Right on. Jeff, real quick, what's making you smile?
Guns and smart women, or if in a room of women, smart women and guns. God bless America.
So you like women, and you would vote for them if they were capable, right?
Especially if they had guns.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR.
He thinks the cost of food is due to corporate greed and not inflation.
Now, 10 p.m. nights.
Which is your signal that it's only going to get worse because price controls will increase scarcity.
On 97.3 The Sky.
Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. The CEO of a tech company, Automatti, based in San Francisco, Matt Mullenweg, got a little bit tired of hearing from whiners and complainers in the company. And he said, hey, I'll pay you your 6 month salary or 30 grand, whichever is greater, for you to take a hike and sign this paper saying, and you'll never attempt to be hired back here again because you won't be welcome. Well, 8.4% of the company took the deal. 18 of these individuals had salaries exceeding $200,000. And they were complaining? Yeah. Whiners, complainers being dealt with effectively. That is your smoking gun. Brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. On behalf of Greg, I'm Bob. God bless you and your family. Take care. See ya.